One, two, three, four.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Behind the Curtain Ministry Podcast. This is Noah Filipiak. I encourage you to subscribe to Behind the Curtain as well as check out at acrossroads.net where I will have bonus material up from our interview today. Our interview today is with Zach Bartels. And it's another great episode where I don't have to do the phone interview. We have Zach right here in studio. And what a studio it is, right, Zach?
Yeah, I keep looking at the rules here. sit on your bum. Don't touch the person next to you, okay? And be as quiet as can be.
That's right. So. Oh, and don't forget number 4.
Hey, wait, there aren't any more. Uh-huh, yeah, yes. Okay.
You are blowing my cover that I'm not actually in the Auto Value Studios above our 105 West Allegan. I'm actually in our kindergarten Sunday school class.
And I was up there not that long ago for one of my books, Michael Patrick Shields. Yes. And I know you've been in there.
Yes.
And man, that's a swanky studio.
Yes, it is.
But this is nice too.
Yeah, it is. We'll take photos up there after we're done and we'll post it as if that's where this was done. So let me introduce you listeners to Zach. Zach is the author of a book coming out on Tuesday. That is 7-7, and at 7 p.m. at Baker Bookhouse in Grand Rapids, you can come join Zach, and myself will be there. I'm a special guest appearance. He didn't put that on the flyer for some reason, but I will be there to hang out with Zach. The Last Con is coming out, and that's Zach's newest novel. While we're talking about it, Zach, why don't you give us a quick rundown of what The Last Con is about?
Oh, man, it's about a con man who gets caught. Goes to jail, finds Jesus, as so many people do in jail, and kind of with the help of that story, makes parole and tries to put his life back together. Starts to wonder if maybe he'd conned himself about the whole Jesus thing, and in the midst of that, he winds up getting kind of pulled back into his life of cons and heists and throw in some, naturally, relics and secret societies and all that kind of stuff. Kidnapping mafia, some mafia action. And it all takes place in the Motor City.
Cool. Zach's first major publisher novel was Playing Saint. Came out, what, October,
yeah.
I think? And honestly, one of the best fiction books I've read. I'm not a huge fiction fan because usually they're not any good. and Playing Saint was excellent, and it has my mother-in-law's stamp of approval as well.
Oh, nice.
She was a big fan.
Actually, we put that on the back cover. So Noah's good. Mother-in-law.
Right. So... and so I'm actually really looking forward to reading this one. Haven't read it yet. But Zach is also a pastor. He's been a pastor for 10 years here in Lansing, Michigan at Judson Memorial Baptist Church. So, Zach, I need to lead with this. We're pretty kind of in-your-face podcast. Christians like the rumor mill. You know, we don't gossip, but we read all the Christian blogs. And
in prayerful concern.
Prayerful concern. And I've been really concerned about you, actually. I've seen your name closely associated with Chaz Marriott.
Oh, yeah.
And I just got to call you out on that a little bit and just kind of get the scoop from you because I'm reading a lot of Facebook comments and YouTube comments, and it's getting kind of nasty.
Well, the thing is, I mean, Chaz, it is true, speaking of jail, that he is currently, he's in a 30-day lockup because he got in a fight with Michael Hyatt again. that keeps happening, you know. It's almost, you could set your watch, by it.
Usually the guy that goes to jail is the guy that won the fight, though.
Yeah, well, right? Chaz is a monster.
I've seen him shirtless on his Twitter page, actually my wife stumbles over, so I don't appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, Chaz, he often is found shirtless in his in his hot tub, which looks like a big, like a bathroom sink, and he was shrunk down.
Yeah, I like that.
But yeah, I mean, if people aren't familiar with Chaz Marriott, he's one of these guys who's all about platform building, branding, and making sure that every single thing you do and every single person you interact with is something you use to build yourself up.
That's why he's so successful.
Yeah, right. So he actually has, and I don't want to say too much about Chaz, but he has 71 blog followers.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and he has 103 Twitter followers.
Here's the question. How many of those are false accounts that he made and followed himself? Because that's really what the good marketers
These
do.
These are questions you don't ask because he might just lose his stuff.
True.
And, you know, so.
True. You don't want to be the next victim of his next reason he's in jail. So that's right. Chaz actually does not follow me back on Twitter. So I'm one of the 101, is it?
I'll mention that to Chaz.
Next time you visit him in jail, I'm actually pretty offended by that.
He'll follow you back this afternoon, I promise, from jail. And you know, you should buy his book. It's called Mega, How to Get Noticed All the Time for Everything.
Will Chaz be at your book signing on Tuesday?
He will. He will. He'll be wearing an ascot and a pinky ring and sitting right up front.
I can't wait. In fact, that's the reason to go then. I can't wait to meet him. But I do hope he's followed me back by then, because I don't want to rumble.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you what, Chaz is often confused with a guy named Ted Klug, but they're distinct entities.
You know, the Christian gossip websites have that problem, with the confusion between the two.
Sometimes we have to discern.
You co-host a podcast with Chaz, do you not, called the Gut Check Podcast, you and Chaz?
No, that'd be me and Ted. So you just confused us again.
Because it's just the voice that I hear, and it sounds very similar. It's like a silky, smooth, buttery voice.
Yeah, yeah.
Very low bass.
Yeah, you know what? We get on that podcast, there are several people you'll hear from and about often. There's Chaz Marriott. There's Frank Turk, who's a menace who must be stopped. He's kind of like our Doc Holliday. And then there's Cliff Graham, who's the author of many kind of amazingly masculine, cut people in half
nice.
Novels.
Excellent.
So it's kind of a motley crew.
I did actually want to ask about Mega. I was trying to get an interview with Chaz, but he's in jail and he big times me and things like that. But I am a wannabe author, unlike yourself, who is an author. And one thing that I struggle with as a wannabe author is reading books about platform. And exactly sort of what Chaz does with his life, which is using everyone for his own gain.
Uh-huh.
And so I haven't read Mega yet. I'm hoping to pick it up on Tuesday. Will there be copies?
I think there will be, yeah. Okay. Actually, Chaz may be signing copies.
Excellent, excellent. I hope. I'm definitely going to purchase a copy and read it. But we'll start with the joking side. What's the actual book about? And then let's go on to the serious side of just... how hard it is to be an author and not just be a sellout of self-promotion, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, the book Mega is basically, it starts out as just straightforward kind of platform building stuff about how to make sure that you take a picture with your family where your wife is smiling and you look kind of JCPenney's handsome. And then it kind of devolves, I'm going to be honest, into kind of a memoir, and it ends with a real sad kind of breakdown of this guy's whole psyche. And obviously the whole thing is, here's, you know what, maybe people want, if you're sensitive, turn it off now, because I'm just going to, I'm going to tell you something that might kind of crack the veneer. Chaz is actually me and Ted. I'm just going to go ahead and say that.
Can I say reported here first?
Yeah. No one knows.
Wow.
Yeah, no, people might suspect.
This is exclusive for the Behind the Curtain Ministry podcast.
But
I never suspected that.
It's like Clark Kent and Superman, you know?
Yeah, dude,
in retrospect, you're like, wait a minute, without the glasses...
I still thought they were the same. I still thought they were two different people until you just told me.
But the reason we wanted to write that kind of satire was just because we were so sick of going... You know, Ted and I speak at writing conferences somewhat frequently, and every time you're somebody whose whole thing, their shtick is... don't worry about the craft. Don't worry about what you're writing. Just make sure that whatever you do, you're using everybody. You're using every opportunity. You're always thinking about building your brand. You know, you're not getting on your blog and even writing what you want to write or some kind of thoughtful piece. You're just writing the right number of words with the right keywords and all that stuff just makes me very, very nauseous.
What does that do to someone's soul? And what I mean by soul is like someone like myself, right? So I want to write. I have this content. I think it's good. And then I'm inundated with that. What can that do to someone?
You know, I think that can, first of all, just steal your joy and passion for what you want to do, because it cheapens it immediately and it turns it into a chore.
Right.
You have all this stuff inside of you that I mean, especially I've read your stuff, Noah. You're not an wannabe author. You've written a book and then you've written a devotional, and I don't know what you've got now is another version of that book. But the thing is, if you've written something because you believe God put it on your heart, and then someone comes along and says, "That's not the half of it." There was a little knee to hand contact. I just broke rule number
That's
two.
Right, you did. Be careful. You
large gestures.
You're gonna have a timeout next.
But and then someone comes along and says, "No, it's not about that. That's just that's the product you're pushing, and here's how you have to push it." I know so many people who have lost their passion for writing or music or whatever it is, just by having someone It's almost like the Pharisees and the yoke of the law. It's just this heavy thing placed around your neck, and it begins to replace that joyful thing that you had to begin with. But at the same time, you're thinking, and I'm thinking, here's the thing, man. HarperCollins, you know, owns like nine, or rather is owned by News Corp, which owns like a whole bunch of, you know, movie studios and TV stations. So it's part of this huge monolith. I also have this thing of like, well, wait a minute. Not nearly enough people are reading this. Not nearly enough people are seeing it. Why write something if people aren't going to read it? And then you immediately go to, okay, well, I need to kind of dance with the devil a little bit and do and start doing this stuff.
Right, right,
and
right.
It's easy to keep getting sucked back into. That becomes – I've had days where I've realized I've neglected, you know, certain duties as a pastor because I've been jacking around with – you know, Twitter and something for it started. It was just gonna be a quick update for 2 minutes, and it became 45. That's horrible. And I really think that there's more bad than good to it.
Mm. How do you balance being your time invested in your ministry as a pastor with the time it takes to write? But then I think sometimes the writing is the easy part, so to speak, as far as the part that's enjoyable. Also, the time that you have to promote yourself and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I used to think of, you know, I would try and separate everything out really well when I first started in ministry. I don't know if you did this, of, you know, this is time when I'm being a pastor, this is time, you know, it is important to set aside time you protect for your family, and then this is, you know, kind of compartmentalize. But with ministry, I think most of us learn you never can really successfully do that because it's always looming there. So I make sure that I keep track of how much time I'm doing with everything and make sure that the end of the week I've given more than an honest week's worth work to my and service and ministry to my people. And that if I'm, you know, on Facebook to post a link to my latest blog and I happen to see that a parishioner of mine is going through a hard time, that I'm going to drop the blog thing and go and follow up with them, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even for pastors who don't write and publish traditionally, I think there's still the expectation that you're going to make this persona out of yourself.
Sure.
You're going to be that, you know, if you're Reformed and you're in that kind of young Calvinist movement, you're going to make this punk rock kind of caricature yourself, and you have to constantly be airbrushing that and tending to it and chiseling away at it. And it can be toxic really easily. And I see that in myself. All the time. And then at the same time, every publisher, whether it's Zondervan, you know, totally Christian worldview that they're espousing, or whether it's Random House or some faceless monolith, they're going to tell you have to be building your brand, building your, so that people will know what you do, they'll want the next thing. And if no one's reading what you're writing, then, you know, so there's that tension.
Yeah, I have wrestled with that. I was listening to the audio Bible a couple of weeks ago, and it was going through Proverbs, and the verse hit me. It's Proverbs 27:2, and it says, "Let someone else praise you and not your own mouth, an outsider and not your own lips." And there's a lot of other scriptures that talk about, you know, there's things I've underlined in my Bible about self-glory, you know, and self-promotion. Don't be wise in your own eyes and these sorts of things. But they do seem to, there's these biblical concepts that seem to fly in the face of author promotion. And it's interesting because it feels like, and you touched on it earlier, author promotion for some people, that is what they write about. Like, they're experts in author promotion, right? So their books and their blogs, and then when they speak at a conference, it's all about, how can you promote yourself as an author? They make whole careers out of this. It's like its own market in and of itself. And I've wrestled with that because, like, both of us, I say I'm a wannabe author because I'm not published yet, but I just definitely spend a lot of time on my writing still. So I'm a pastor and an author when it comes to how I allot my time, and I have to do some of that promotional stuff too for a publisher to think I'm worth publishing. You're a pastor and an author. What I've wrestled with is, it's very clear to me in Scripture, as a pastor, I'm not to promote myself. And we see that. I don't really need to mention any names, but, you know, we see guys who I think just get full of themselves. And they think they're sweet as pastors, and they get arrogant. They think they're really cool. They think they're always right. And then usually these are the guys that get that, so to speak, fall, or their ministries dissolve, or they just leave their theology altogether. So for you, how have you sort of balanced those two things? I mean, you are you're Zach, but you're also a pastor and you're an author. And I feel like for example, I've noticed your blog, your website, it says author Zach Bartels. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like an intentional way of, because in some ways, this will be the last thing I say, I'm trying to work this out in my own head. In some ways, I feel like there's some things you're allowed to do as an author in that sort of field that are like, yeah, that's just what you have to do to right. like, for this to work. Like, you have to let people know about your stuff.
Necessary evil.
Necessary evil. It's just kind of part of the gig, and people know about expect. It's like if you're a musician. I think of it the same way. If you're a musician, you're going to treat your art a certain way than if, let's say, you were a worship leader, right?
Right.
You're gonna treat your art.
And you could have both.
You could do both. You could be a worship leader who also writes their own music and performs mm-hmm. and those sorts of things, but those are two different fields.
I think both can glorify God.
Both can glorify God, absolutely. I think maybe that's a good analogy even for what you're doing, what I'm trying to do as well. So how have you done that where you can do Proverbs 27:2, you can do some of the other things. Writing's certainly not a sin, but when does it become a sin, I guess?
Well, you know, and I don't know how interesting this will be to anyone except maybe as like a case study, but when I made a website that was just for my writing, it was before I had an agent and it was before I had a contract or anything, and I still have the domain, www.pastorzach.com.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, then there'll be the author one as well. I'll put my sermons on one. I just kind of ramped down after a while. It was exhausting.
Yeah.
It was schizophrenic. Right. So I ramped down. If you go to pastorzach.com,
right.
It just pops you right over to my main website where I do put up my sermons.
Sure.
Where I do put, you know, if I write a newsletter article that I think would be beneficial to a wider audience than just my church, I put that on that website, you know. So it's not just here's my fiction stuff. It's like I'm trying not to be a brand. I'm trying just to be a guy, you know. At this point, and that is a shift. So instead of being, you know, this is something that Zachary Bartels, the author of these books, is saying. And yet, when you go on that website, there's me like glowering in like a dark alley
right.
with a like requisite
right.
headshot for the
right.
which isn't me at all. If you when you went on pastorzach.com, it was me. I was still in a suit because that's kind of my vibe, but I was smiling and holding a cigar and just like, hi, I'm a guy. Here's some stuff I wrote. Let's interact. Mm-hmm. And so I think you have, but I don't think it's dishonest. You know, if both are really you, if both the worship leader and the guy who, you know, goes and performs are both genuinely that person, then when he says, here's my CDs and you can buy them here, and by the way, click here and you'll hear, you know, some worship music, I don't know. I certainly don't want to judge people who are doing that, and I don't think it's just because then I would be judging myself. I really think that you can, like you said, I said necessary evil, but I don't think there's anything evil in trying to, I mean, even you got a message from God. The prophets didn't sit there in their, you know, closet and mumble it. They went out in the streets where people were. They went in the marketplace and they
right.
shouted it. And so it's different, you know, for Jonah to say, repent in 3 days or you'll perish. And for me to say, this is a story I wrote. But both playing Saint in The Last Con and stuff that I've done in the past has been very much intended to say that, you know, here's some truth from God, and instead of just throwing it at you straight like I would in a sermon,
yep.
I'm going to try and weave it into, you know, an interesting and engaging story. It's something that Jesus did. So
yeah, true.
And even he sat down and said, all right, everyone come to me. There's
right.
going to be food, by the way.
Right.
And come and listen. There's going to be a show in the sense that, and this is getting a little crass, and I realize as I'm saying it, but, you know, people are going to be healed, and maybe you don't need to be healed, but people came just out of curiosity. Demons are going to be cast out of somebody, and then I'm going to stay here and listen to this guy talk. The apostles seem to sort of do that a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Now I'm not a hard cessationist, but I don't have, you know, prophecy and healing going on the regular in my church service. We don't have a time for that. I certainly think God can do that, but we're not doing that anymore. But I still think the principle kind of holds. That says, come here. This isn't, you know, come here and see some wacky show, and we're going to call that church. It's come and engage with what I'm presenting, what I think God's gifted me to do. And if you like it, I'm even going to ask you to retweet it or right. share it or whatever, so that can go broader.
Yeah. Brings up two questions. One, how do we make sure the gospel never becomes a product that we are promoting for our own sort of business benefits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Christmongers, yes. as Luther said, yeah.
Because I feel like with a lot of what we're talking about, that's sort of the angle that the Christian, like, marketer platform sort of aficionados play, is like, well, it's the gospel, and you want everyone to know that, I'm not saying this is true for everyone, but it's very easy to fall into a deception where you're saying, I'm pushing this for Jesus, but really I'm pushing it because I really want to get published. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm pushing this for Jesus, but I'm really pushing it because I really want money, you know, and I'm not saying money's bad. I mean, this could just be for your job, right? But what advice would you give to an author, even in my shoes, that's sort of starting out, or advice that you've given yourself? Because that's one of the worst things we can do with the gospel, is turn it into a product that's for our own profit. I mean, that just sounds terrible.
Right, but at the same time, more than once in the New Testament, the laborer's worth his pay. You know, there's multiple references from Jesus' lips and in the epistles about, you know, double honor for teachers and sure. the fact that they ought to be able to get by and live. There's a big difference between that and getting rich, I think. But, you know, as a minister, I never feel, I hope you don't either, a sense of shame that I cash a check
right.
every couple yeah. weeks so that my family can eat and we can pay the mortgage for doing gospel work. And part of me says, well, shouldn't I just want to do that? And yes, I do just want to do it. But also there's the realities in a fallen world that yeah. It's hard to get by sometimes, and you need to have income regardless. I mean, even before the fall, there was work.
Sure.
And so I think I look at, and maybe it would be different if I just wrote, you know, suspense thrillers for, you know, just basic entertainment without the spiritual component. But I look at that the same way. Mm-hmm. That you know, here's a kind of arm of my ministry, and it looks a lot like a lot of other guys. And maybe that's why it's easy not to think too hard about it, because mm-hmm. there, you know, you're Stephen James and you're Terry Blackstocks and people who have been doing this for years, Frank Peretti or whatever, and their names are known, mm-hmm. and that's how they sell books. And if they didn't sell books, they wouldn't be able to publish more books. If they didn't sell books, then no one would know what they had to say, and no one would wrestle with it, and nobody mm-hmm. would be sanctified by it. So at the end of the day, I don't even remember the question anymore.
I was wondering why I didn't include Tim LaHaye on that list. Sorry.
Tim LaHaye of LaHaye Armaments, which actually owns a subsidiary which is called Dynex, which produces both, I don't know, this is all from a different book Ted and I wrote. Re-raptured.
I'm in the middle of that one. It's very fun. My original question was just, how do we do this? Obviously, what we're doing is to honor God. But sometimes the folks that are telling us to increase our platform mm-hmm. are saying and use.
How does it not become a product? Is what you
yeah,
said.
Just yeah, yeah. In a sort of sleazy way where it's not about the gospel anymore. It's really about, I'm just going to use the gospel as a means for me to get money or mm-hmm. you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, I think you have three different kind of ends of the spectrum, which a spectrum can only have two, but there's kind of three. It's a triangular
sure.
spectrum.
Yeah.
You've got the Gene Scott guys, who are few and far between.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, he was this amazing televangelist in like the 70s and 80s who smoked a cigar and cursed a lot.
Okay.
And he would just sit there and say, until we get X number of dollars, I'm not saying a word.
Huh.
And he had these just hardcore fanatic fans
yeah.
who would just send in the money
yeah.
as he ranted and told them they were worthless. And then when he got enough, then he would preach, and it would be some
okay.
just jankety thing.
I gotta try that.
Look him up.
Okay, we'll link to that on the blog that I do on my blog for this episode.
He's died now. I almost said went to be with the Lord, but I don't know. It's hard to say. Then you've got, you know, like the guys who you look at now, and there is some, you know, doubt. You know, you're really shiny-toothed televangelists who are mostly just telling you what you want to hear. You know, guys who are, you know, here, let me handle your itching ears. I'll say what you want to hear.
Right.
You'll keep me in money right. so that I can keep saying what you want to hear. It's a symbiotic, toxic relationship.
Right.
But then you also have, I mean, I listen every day on a local station to R.C. Sproul.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he's done preaching, or David Jeremiah, or all these guys who are on the radio, somebody comes on and says, please send a gift
sure.
so that we can pay for the airwaves that brought this to your ears.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. you know, there's, I don't know that there's even a line there. It's all in the heart.
Sure.
It's not,
sure.
I mean, if you mention that three times instead of one, or if you get to a time of year where you say, this is our drive, I mean, these are realities.
Yeah.
In the heart of this guy, I'm quite sure that R.C. Sproul's not, you know, twirling his mustache saying, I'm making money
right.
by preaching the gospel.
Right.
He wants to keep his ministry growing so that more people hear the gospel, more people are edified,
mm-hmm.
and sinners come to faith. So I think the secret is not to have all these check marks. Okay, when I meet these criteria, then I've stepped over the line, and now I've become the Christmonger. It's really checking your own heart again and again, what is it that's motivating me to do this? And the moment it becomes renown
yeah.
or money, not quit, but you know, have guys who will hold you accountable.
Right.
You know, keep yourself grounded in the Word, keep yourself focused on the cross, and keep reminding. I mean, even the donkey knew that it wasn't all about him as people were cheering on the way into Jerusalem.
Right.
You just got to remind ourselves how lowly we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to do that regularly, not because I've had huge success, but because I'm a huge sinner.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. And I think what I found helpful is to know that that comes subtly. I think sometimes, you know, so my quick kind of background with writing was my sabbatical in 2012, I wrote this manuscript and I was trying to get it published right away. And I had just read the Platform book and I was like, I was all high off of it. I mean, it was...
I remember.
Yeah, I was a... I can't think of the right word to use, but even to you, I said some stupid things. I just said some stupid, like, things I look back on I was really embarrassed of. Like, for example, I'll just give you an example. This is embarrassing. I don't know if this will sound embarrassing, but it's embarrassing to me. so I wrote this manuscript, and I was at the Justice Conference in 2012 in Philadelphia, and I had started to like contact some publishers and whatnot, and my original plan is I was going to give the money from that book, if I made any money on it, to World Relief, who I really love, and they're great. And I had talked to Don Golden at the time, was their church engagement guy, and Don has he co-wrote a book called Jesus Wants to Save Christians, and like so he's been in that world a little bit. Now he works for World Vision and does the same role there. But anyway, he and I are hanging out at the Justice Conference. We knew each other just from World Relief stuff. And he knew I was trying to write this book. And he was just being supportive as a friend, you know, those sorts of things. And he was walking with Lynn Hybels over to her next, like, speaking engagement thing. And Lynn is Bill Hybels' wife. And she's really a big supporter of World Relief. And she's mm-hmm. a speaker at the conference every year. And it's funny because for me, I just read or probably listened to a podcast or something about how, like, this is so embarrassing, how important it is to have, like, these name people, like, endorsing mm-hmm. your book. And,
yeah.
And that's just part of it, right? It's just part of it. So I'm, like, this, like, guy who's never written anything, and I have a Word document, you know, which now looking back, I'm like, that's not a book. That's a Word document, but it's okay.
Oh, the line is gone, man. Convert it to a PDB, right. Throw it on a Kindle, and it's a book.
It's a book, right? And so she's like, Lynn is like in a hurry, and I'm like, hey, so could I send this to you? And the funny thing is, because her and Bill had written a book probably back in the 70s or 80s about marriage, and I thought, there's like a loose connection here from like this marriage book that you wrote to this book
right.
on sexual purity. And could you like endorse the book? I'm just, and you know, Lynn Hybels is like my mom's age. She might as well just be my mom, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I'm all like intimidated to like even be like talking to her and stuff. And I'm sure she totally forgot about that.
You know, never sent it.
If I ever, oh no, no. Well, thankfully, that's a whole nother story that takes long, but God put the brakes on that, and I ended up like pretty much ditching that whole manuscript, and I rewrote. I kept about a quarter of it, and I rewrote the whole thing into what I have now. So what I'm looking to get published now is that about a quarter of that content, and I put it into the 40-day reading for men sort of thing. So never sent it to her, but she was really nice. She's like, oh, I do get a lot of things. I might not be able to respond to it, but you can send it to me. She's really sweet. But I look back on that, and I just think there was something about that that makes me feel really slimy. Like, I wasn't looking to her as a person. I was looking to her kind of like Chaz Marriott would. You know, it was like I was
as a possible tool.
Yeah, as a total, like, how can you be a sale? Like, you're not a person. Like, you're someone that can put money in my pocket. You can put security in my...
But the money wasn't going to go to your pocket. It was going to go to a justice
Well,
minister.
True, true, but
I don't think that's as bad as you feel like it
okay.
is.
Okay, it was... I was... but I think I look back, but I do see how insecure I was. Uh-huh. And so there was an insecurity in me that I'm very glad that never went anywhere, that original, because...
I read it. I thought it was good, man.
Thank you. Thank you. And even some of the stuff that you said was very helpful... for this thing that I wrote next. I think what I wrote next is a lot better.
Well, let me just ask you, though. I mean, is it because of how you didn't first view her as an individual and just jumped right to how can you help me?
Just having no relationship with someone and just almost like I felt like just a salesman. Like I don't, you know.
See, and that's a reality in publishing. I have...
Sure.
I got hooked up by a publicist at my publisher with a bunch of probably 10 or 12 other people in my genre.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm going to tell them to loop you in. They will promote your stuff. You'll promote theirs, and it won't help them at all because everyone who might read you already knows about them. But I didn't feel weird about that in the least. Then Ted and I had this discussion on our podcast about, you know, how you view endorsements of books and stuff.
Okay.
He only uses people who he knows and respects
and loves
outside of knowing them through publishing. And I said, I just don't see what the problem is if you know, like, I didn't know Cliff Graham at all when I first sent him a copy of Playing Saint. He read it on an airplane. He sent me an endorsement, said, this is great. Let me, you know, be encouraged. I think this is good stuff. And I had, you know, I'd been promoting his books just because I think they're insanely awesome.
Sure.
And now he's become kind of, you know, the online friend that we Skype and but I've never shaken his hand.
Yeah.
You know, and someday I hope to hang out with him. I don't know. I don't feel like that's a slimy thing if my intention isn't always looking at, you know, my shift is, well, my congregation can't help me, so they're second class. Mm-hmm. These people over here can help me, so they're more important to me. You know, if somebody emails me tomorrow, I mean, actually, I had a guy. I went to our alma mater. Wait, you didn't go to Cornerstone undergrad, did you?
I did.
You did. Okay.
I did.
He's just finishing up a degree, and he said, can you read my thesis? Because I know you went here, and you just had a book published. You have another one? And I didn't think that he was like, well, wait a minute. We don't know each other. Why are you? He wanted me to help him with that a little bit, and then he wanted me to give him a little advice, and probably he wanted me to be a contact to help him get his stuff published. I don't know. I didn't feel used. I felt like, good for you. I wish you well.
Mm. Do you remember what episode of the Gut Check podcast that was? I'll link to it on when I blog. You can pick it up
later.
Yeah,
I'll find it.
We'll put a link for that up. That sounds like an interesting conversation. I think for me the difference was, if I had, let's say I had my book, publisher had accepted it, and it was like ready to look to get endorsements, I wouldn't feel slimy about sending it even.
Because you were climbing a ladder at that time.
Yeah, exactly. I think I was using her to climb the ladder to say, like, if I can put your name on my author proposal, it was still in that Word document form. I think that's different. For me, that felt different than coming to someone I didn't know more as like, hey, I've already... I don't know. I'm not using you as a shortcut. I'm not. I felt for some reason that felt different to me, and it still does. If and when this book gets accepted by a publisher, I have people I'm planning to contact that I've never met, and I don't think because I think the book will connect with them. It's not even for like just selfish gain. I just think like, hey, I think this book will connect well with you, and I like what you do. Some of the people are just people that I like their stuff, and maybe they'll like mine, and I'd love to support. And I think there's fine to have a mutual, like, supporting of one another, those sorts of things. But, yeah, I think it was the way I was wanting to use that conversation to establish myself in the eyes of a publisher. I don't know. Maybe it's my own insecurity. Like, it's just a Word document. Mm-hmm. Nobody else said this was any good. This could be anything that anybody wrote. I think there's some of that there, too.
Let me get real raw here and possibly...
Behind the curtain, you mean?
Yeah.
You're going to get behind the curtain on me?
Let me tell you what I did. Actually, my wife did it on my behalf because she's awesome. A guy named Stephen James, who's many times over New York Times bestseller in kind of supernatural thrillers and Christian fiction, had put it... She works in publishing. She works for Baker Publishing, and he's one of her authors that she does copy and promotional stuff. And he tweeted, you know, what should I read? I'm looking for something to read. Mm-hmm. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have anything. No, I had an agent. I didn't have a contract. She said... She private messaged him and said, I see that you're looking for something to read. Would you read my husband's manuscript? Now, this is a guy who does not give endorsements. I've never seen... I read a lot of this kind of fiction. I've never seen his name. And he said, oh, what the heck? You know, you're someone I know. We have a relationship. She sent it to him. He sent me a great endorsement, which I put on the front page of the proposal. Which then my acquisitions editor said, I saw that, and I said, I have to read this.
Yeah.
Because Stephen James liked it. Which then they put on the cover of the book.
I saw that.
So now, so kind of I did what you felt sheepish about doing.
Right, true.
And I think that the difference is maybe that my wife went ahead and reached out on my behalf.
They had a little bit of a personal connection.
Right.
Beforehand.
I don't think I would have just blasted it off to him and said, I like your stuff. Here, you should like mine and say that you do.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a couple more questions here before we wrap up. This is related, but... Why do you and Ted do the Gut Check Press? I feel like there's obviously a comedic element to it, but I think, am I wrong to say there's a deeper kind of meaning behind it as well?
You are wrong to assume there is a deeper meaning behind
it. I'm wrong.
We came at that from two separate angles. Ted had done 7 or 8 books with traditional houses. He'd done Why We're Not Emergent, Why We Love the Church, some things that have sold, you know, 120,000 copies.
Yeah.
And he needed a chance to write a book, put it together, and not have to deal with editorial, change this, do that. You know, the normal stuff that goes with the book. He wanted to just have total creative control once.
Yeah.
I had not published anything, and I just thought it sounded like fun to make a book with this guy who's my buddy. So we got into that. We made the Kind of Christianity, which is kind of send up of the emergent church, God rest its soul. And then we followed up with Younger, Restlesser, Reformeder, which made fun of our own little subculture of smug Calvinists. Also, God rest its soul, that thing's kind of done. And then we just said, this is fun, and kept doing it. So so it was, you know, it's its own kind of... you need to have that stuff. There's no platform to it.
Yeah.
There's no branding to it. We don't care if what we say on our podcast hurts or helps our you know, reader share. We're just doing this for fun, and I think that's an important thing to hang on to.
It seems unique for a pastor to write fiction. I don't know how common that is with other fiction writers.
I'll tell you how common it is with being interviewed.
What do you mean?
Everybody asks me that.
Really?
Pastors write nonfiction. Yeah. Why don't you write fiction?
Yeah. That's it. Well, man, darn.
I'm sorry,
man. Usually people are like, good question. Now you're like, lame question. I guess that,
you know, it stood out because all the rest were such good questions.
But, right, true. But how about this for a note? Most pastors aren't talented enough to write fiction.
Oh, now you're talking.
And that was in
my
notes.
I'm letting someone else say something.
That was in my notes. Honestly, I was talking to a couple of your fiction friends at your last book signing. And I told them, Susie
Finkbeiner.
Yeah, Finkbeiner. I told her, I said, I don't know how you write fiction because that takes skill. Like, it actually, like, it would be really hard to write a really good story. Whereas, honestly, I feel like nonfiction, you know, it's not that different than writing a sermon and then just putting it into text. So, pastors are good at writing sermons. It kind of makes sense to write. I mean, being good at writing fiction, which you are, it's a little, It's like, I don't know, it's like being a pastor who's really good at hitting baseballs in a batting cage or something.
It's just a different skill set, and I think it's related to being a pastor in that I usually try to preach kind of a narrative thing.
Yeah.
Books are narrative.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember when back when Rob Bell was a spectacular preacher of the gospel.
Yes.
And I don't know if you... I don't know, when you went to Cornerstone, you're just a few years younger than me. Yeah. I used to go there every Saturday night and hear this guy preach and have my mind blown by just amazing, in-your-face, really good communication. Then we would also go and listen to his band, Big Phil. And that's, I think it's another example of... There was no hype or pretension to that, but they did say, you know, come to our shows and put out flyers.
Yeah.
I remember when you opened up the CD. I still have the CD at home. You open up the liner notes. It didn't say Love Wins. It said just big, the whole thing. You unfold it and it just said, Jesus is your only hope.
Hmm.
And I was like, man, yeah, that is so punk rock and so cool for that to be the liner notes.
Yeah.
And he just happened to be good. I mean, most pastors, Ben Witherington's right, a good guitarist, true, so is true, Rob Bell, but most pastors aren't rock stars.
Right.
Most pastors aren't great at basketball. I suck at it. Most pastors couldn't play semi-pro football.
Right.
And I just happen to have some talent at telling stories. So.
But it's cool, and you kind of said this earlier in the podcast, it's cool how you take the storytelling ability and use it in a way Jesus used it, in a sense, to give a message. Well, maybe you wouldn't go that direct with it, but what you're doing in your books, what I liked about Playing Saint was this. The reason I don't like most Christian fiction is because it's like over-the-top, corny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It would be like what you described about Last Con, which I haven't read yet.
I gave it to you like 3 weeks ago, yeah, but yeah, okay, yeah, man.
My wife's reading it right now.
Oh, all right, good say.
A lot of Christian fiction's corny and very predictable, where it's like almost like nobody has a cool testimony in my life, so I'll make one up.
Right. Like, I love it.
Right? So like, there's this guy who's the character?
What's his? Fletcher.
So Fletcher, he's this bad dude. He goes to jail, and then he accepts Christ in jail. And you're telling me this, and I'm like, Zach, this doesn't sound like you. This is way too corny and predictable. Like, really, a guy goes to jail and accepts Christ? But then there's like, what I love about Playing Saint, and I haven't read Last Con yet, but I look forward to, is then it's like the real life, like, oh, and here comes all these twists to, maybe without giving away anything in the book. I mean, is the guy like questioning, does he feel like his faith was a con? Is he questioning like,
there's that, you know, and there's the element of, and this is what I thought was interesting about it, which made me kind of get into it, was he goes from this insanely exciting lifestyle to now he's on parole and he has to do this job filling vending machines, even though he's got, you know, a doctorate, and he's used to living large, and he lives in a dumpy rental house with a really condescending landlord. And he goes, wait a minute, I got saved and now everything's boring. It's supposed to be exciting. It's boring.
Yeah.
And that I think we all can kind of relate to.
Yes. Yeah. That stuff's relatable. That's because I honestly think over the top, kind of not believable testimonies aren't relatable. And that, I like the relatability of the Christian life. But even what's like Playing Saint, what's funny about it is like the story, it's, you know, it's a really cool story. The story itself is over the top because that's what like a thriller normally is. But within it, there's all these things where you're like, and obviously, I don't know whether you would say this guy, this character was like, for me, it's like the Joel Osteen like prototype sort of vein or this or that. But as a pastor, like I'm reading it, and I think of all the different ministry models out there, and there is a seduction to them. There's a this to them. There's a that. And you could write a book just on that, like how to not be seduced as a pastor, mm-hmm, by like the ways of the world. Or you could write a really cool story like you did, and you get the same lesson across,
right,
but in a much more palatable form, which I think is pretty cool.
Which is, I mean, it's kind of a ninja way to do it, you know.
It is, you
draw someone in and then you kind of judo, yes, from them and say, okay, now you, and that, I think even the corny ones, and I think there's less and less corny Christian fiction. You maybe should give it another shot.
I'm going to, now that I know you and these friends of yours and things like that. Honestly will.
But even the corny stuff was trying to do that.
Yeah,
you know, when we watch the Christian movies, they think they're pulling it off,
right,
and oh, hey, look, a conversion scene, and you're like, yeah, I saw that coming from,
right,
the first, you know, from the credits,
right.
It's hard to avoid the pitfalls and kind of cliches, and maybe I don't entirely, but I think the real trick is to play with them,
yeah,
and think, you know, you act like it's going to be this, and then you kind of fake back, and hopefully the Last Con is similar in that, where it doesn't fall into some of the ditches of, and this guy's safe,
right,
now he gets a haircut and puts on a suit.
Yes. When you say ninja, I just think Ninja Turtle, by the way. So,
I approve of that.
If I can ever be the quote on the back of your book, that's what I'm going to say about your writing.
Nice.
He's like the Ninja Turtle of Christian fiction.
Well, if that's the case, then you can never be the quote on the
come
back.
Come on!
They would love
it. Ninja Turtles are big right now.
Completely off topic.
Oh, the movie thing!
That sucked.
The movie was bad.
What a travesty.
The movie was bad.
I took my 7-year-old, and we're just nudging each other the whole time.
Yeah,
we left, and we're like, oh, let's not talk about that ever again.
Hey, my daughter is 3, and we watched the original cartoon. cartoons together. That's where it's at. And she's like obsessed with them, and I'm a very proud father.
What are the first words spoken by a Ninja Turtle in the original cartoon?
From the first episode?
Yeah, from the pilot.
Oh, man, I've probably watched it 20 times in the last month. But
it's
the first
a thug who's advancing on April, and the bow staff comes out to block his path, and Donatello says, "Chill out, homeboy."
Chill out, homeboy. That's a good trivia.
I still get kind of like goosebumps when I think about it.
I love that. I love
this
that.
This has really devolved. It's maybe okay. You should cut this part out.
It's just because you're when the episode I did with you and the episode I did with Ted were definitely the most two like devolved episodes.
Deconstructing podcast.
Of all of my episodes. So if anyone doesn't like this episode, it's okay. Most of the rest of them aren't like this. But if you like it,
Listen to the one with Ted,
which was episode 2, and listen to Gut Check podcast, which we will link to, because that's how I roll.
Awesome.
I like to support my friends.
Then I'll link back to you,
that's right.
And we've used each other as a tool.
Just like Chaz,
brought it back around, man.
Just like Chaz taught us. We're making Chaz proud. Quick, in conclusion, tell me what the INSPE Awards are. I saw that on your blog for Playing Sane. That's
okay.
Pretty cool.
So the INSPE Awards are an award that I didn't win.
Okay, it's over now.
It's
but
over.
You were nominated with some big-time books,
and I got the short list.
Yeah,
but Ted Decker came and snatched that away from me. But
I've heard of him.
He's huge. And the book that he won with is actually really innovative. It's called AD 30, and it's a suspense novel set around the death of Christ. But the Carol Awards is what you should be asking me about.
Okay, I will. Tell me about the Carol Awards.
The Carol Awards are the American Christian Fiction Writers Association awards. And I got on the. Here's the thing. I'm blowing my own horn,
and
this is what we feel weird about, and we wonder about spiritually. But the finalists, it's three in every category, and I got in there with the debut novel.
Cool.
So there's actually a gala.
Can we like vote or anything for this?
No, it's not like that. It's like a panel of judges.
Okay.
So we'll find out. We'll find out.
Well,
what
congratulations,
happened.
Man.
Well, thank you.
That's great. So coming up this Tuesday at Baker Bookhouse in Grand Rapids. Which is, I would say I have no idea who listens to this podcast, but if you're in the area, come and meet Zach, meet Chaz. He'll be there as well. And I'm looking forward to that. 7 p.m. on 7/7, the perfect Christian number.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And without further ado, I will conclude this episode of the Behind the Curtain Ministry Podcast. Zach, I really appreciate you joining us.
No problem. Thank you for the Diet Coke.
You're welcome. It was actually Diet Pepsi. I hope that was okay. Some people are really snobby about that. But thank you for, tolerating that. Thank you for only breaking one of the rules in the studio
actually,
today.
Actually, I wasn't quiet as can be either.
True, but you did sit on your bum.
So.
That's good. And I do encourage you to check out @acrossroads.net, and we'll have this episode posted there with a bunch of bonus stuff you can click on to learn about Gene Scott, to find the Gut Check podcast, and much more. And please do subscribe on iTunes, because you never know when the next podcast will be posted, and that's the best way to stay up to date. Until next time, I will see you behind the curtain and at a crossroads.
Well, I went down to the crossroads, everybody just passed.